So everybody, please welcome Peter Esner.
Thank you. Is this working? Yeah. That's me. I'm from the Debian project. So I'm biased in obvious ways. So if you have experience with other distributions and what they're already doing that I don't know, please contribute. So let's see. What's the Linux distribution? Just so we clear what we're talking about. What most of us spend most of our time on right now is integrating green open source software into some system that works well together. And we have policies, file system standards, and then a bunch of other things like that. So that is what we're currently doing. I think what actually started more is to actually get the software to the user. Right now that's pretty easy because everyone has internet. But it used to be more difficult, and actually the original Linux distributions didn't have a lot of sort of policies or a nice integration. They just had some binary tall box perhaps and put it on a medium and ship it to the user. So that is another task, and to some degree the third task of Linux distributors is to sort of be the implementers or the guardians of freedoms that. You know, various organizations such as the Free Software Foundation or the Open Source Initiative have defined, you know, they put them on paper or on the internet, but it's actually the distributors who can have to, or should, follow that and then actually provide those freedoms to the user. So, and then the other part of the talk is what is a cloud, and there's a bunch of definitions around, and so this is my definition. So this is something I pulled together somehow. So it's provisioning of services hosted on shared resources over the internet. So there's a couple parts here. One is sort of the provisioning, which is the same as sort of distributing, perhaps, and the hosting on shared resources. So there has this virtualization and stuff like that goes into that, and then this whole thing happens over the internet. And then there's also these things called private clouds, which is then not over the internet. So you basically have the provisioning and shared resources and virtualization in your own data center, perhaps. It's called a private cloud. So so this might have been the first Linux distribution, maybe 15, 20 years ago. So that's what people did back then, right? They took binary tables and put them on the floppy disks and then sent them around, or the alternative, perhaps, is that's what thing. I'm actually not old enough to remember these, but that's what you did back then, right? You just sort of downloaded all the telephone network, and then you wanted to install Linux or some good operating system locally. As I said, that was sort of the task of the early Linux distributions to get the software out there. Then what people started doing is put these things into, you know, the disks, I guess, into boxes like this, and a bunch of other ones also like this that you can recognize. Yeah. And put manuals in there, and then you can order them, you can ship them around, or you can even buy them in the shops and bookshops. I don't think that actually that exists anymore to a large degree. You can probably still order them, but I don't think you can buy them in bookshops. And then as the stuff grew, then you use these kind of media, and they kept growing. You know, first there were CDs, and now it's like this many CDs, or you use DVDs, and then there's like five or six, I think, for Debian. I guess you can use Blu-ray now, that's just one. But this is just accumulating, but doesn't really help people, because the latest sort of devices that we have now, they don't actually have CD drives anymore, right? They're small netbooks. So how do you install these? Well, I think you probably do it with USB sticks, but you can't actually, you could, but you don't really sell or distribute USB sticks, right? People buy them themselves, and then they download an ISO image on that, boot from that, and delete the thing. So it's just kind of complicated actually nowadays if you don't have a CD drive anymore. So that's sort of where we're now, and certainly this will continue to exist, right? Because you still need to install your desktop or your laptop. There's still people in other parts of the world who don't have broadband internet, and they just want to, you know, put some learning software in their school computers, and that's what they have, completely different infrastructure. But what we have now mostly is this sort of this at home, right? This is a DSL, so we can just basically download everything. We don't need any media anymore. Then you have these sort of things. And so how do you install these? Obviously, people do that, and there are solutions for that. But it's all ad hoc made up. And you don't, these mostly have CD drives and USB, so you could boot them yourself, right? And then people will write like some automation for that before they want to version touch. But so what the cloud idea now is actually, this is not your own data center, this is Amazon or Rackspace or something. They, first of all, you don't go there until you install it yourself. And they do give you some pre-made images, you can just install that there, but then that's what they tell you you can use. Of course, you can also install your own, but you have to sort of make that up yourself again. Or another thing that's sort of popular right now is virtual, various virtual things, virtual box and everyone, so run locally. And how do you install these? Well, I think the way it works right now is actually you download the ISO image and sort of mount the ISO image in that thing and maybe boot it up as a regular operating system, which seems kind of stupid actually, because you can just, maybe you should just be able to download virtual box images, just have it. That obviously exists because you just put it up, but maybe that should actually be sort of something a Linux distributor actually just gives you as sort of a primary product instead of an ISO image. Because it's installing these sort of things locally, you know, you fire a VirtualBox and you download the thing, you mount it in, you boot it up again, and then you sort of have it installed, installing the software again. And so that seems kind of ridiculous. It takes half an hour, and maybe you should just be able to download these things and set up in 1 minute. So there are some solutions for that. So you just first you make up something yourself. But every data center probably has something like, you know, you have images and VMware sells something or make something up. So there's a bunch of things available, but it's just sort of completely diverse. Some interesting sort of approaches that are also free software and somewhat well integrated with the Linux distributions, for example. Sort of from the Debian world, but they also support other operating systems. FAI and Phi is fully automated installation. If you want to check that out, that's the URL. That sort of works that way. You set up a server and put some images and configuration down, and you just boot up all the machines and they fetch the stuff via DHCP and TFTP and so on. And so. But that works maybe for your own data center, but it doesn't really help you, you know, if you want to put stuff in the cloud, because you can. Put your own DHCP server out and these sort of things, so it doesn't really work. So, as I mentioned, you know, maybe that's sort of a new idea to think about now. Instead of, or in addition to, just putting out ISO images, why not just sort of distribute in some way, it needs to be figured out, obviously, to just have sort of virtual box images or some standard. Problem is there are no standards really for that, so that needs to be worked out. But why not distribute sort of virtual box images as it, when you make a release? For example, and you can download them, put them on your machine, set up in 1 minute. Or do some, instead of, you know, downloading images of various kinds, you just have some kind of service integrated in your Linux distribution offering website, something. You say, well, I want a machine and put it there. That's where it should go, right? That's the, sort of the promise of the cloud. You can be up and emitted. You obviously have to set up, you know, an account with Amazon and make sure you can pay them and so on. But once you have that, you can just say, well, you know, this is what I want, put it there. It doesn't. And this actually exists. So this is actually, I don't work for Ubuntu, this is just something I found. So this is pretty much actually what this is, and this, I think, is where things are going to go. So this is, I think it's actually called the Ubuntu Enterprise Cloud, or Ubuntu Cloud, it's based on the free software. And I'll tell what it is there. And this is basically how it works, right? You install this sort of management thing, and you set up an account with Amazon or whatever. And or you can have a private cloud. And then you just, you know, have this sort of web interface, and you just sort of like, what this, and I want a new instance. Well, you can't really see that. I want a new instance, it's that name, then you set up some access key or some password, and do some pre-configuration and say, well, oh, that's my machine. And that works. It's, and I don't know if anyone else actually offers that right now, but I think that's sort of where things are going to go. So, anyone know this? So problems I mentioned is, well, there are some emerging standards, you could say, but there's no real standard. This is a an image format that you can sort of deploy or something like that. There are some leading vendors, like Rackspace or Amazon, are well known, that sort of are defining this. And presumably, in a few years down the road, some standardization effort will come out of that. We don't know right now. There are some libraries around, like libvirt, for example, that can abstract that away somehow, and this is actually used also with this Ubuntu and various other pieces that abstract that away. But obviously, when the next vendor comes out, you have to adjust it. There's still some degree of locking. So the other thing, there's a bunch of software out, also free software that can manage all that, right? To actually to put it there. The query what's there, to manage the whole thing, to do monitoring. There's a bunch of things being emerging now. But they're also out there, as is typical, right? There's one website, there's another website. You can check them all sort of together and download them and try just to fit them together. And that's a lot of work. And so as I mentioned in the beginning, so Linux distributions ought to be the integrator of that. And that's surely already happening, but needs to do more that should happen. You can just say, you know, I download the latest of X and it has all the software, just click around and have something. So, and it's not going to be easy, but that's I think where things are going to go. Another problem I think with most of this is these are web applications. Packaging of web applications has traditionally been a problem for various technical reasons, and people are sort of now, by now, afraid of them because they have, you know, security problems and this and that. And so, packaging web applications is a bit of an underlying problem there, perhaps. So, here are some links that contain other links to interesting ideas about this. So this eucalyptus thing is the sort of the leading, I would say, sort of the leading most popular provisioning management software, I suppose. That's actually what runs this sort of Ubuntu cloud thing. And that's open source. You can, you know, download that yourself, actually set up this whole thing yourself. And, you just need to staff it and the same thing. And there are some two blog posts that I found interesting. They have lots of 11 open source cloud computing projects to watch, which contains links to other sort of software that support this, and here's another interesting blog post you might want to follow testing information. So that's part one of this. Any questions so far? So the second part of this is the Linux stack. So to some degree, right, Linux is now leading server operating system, leading embedded operating system, probably. Desktop's been always a bit of a problem, and every year was the year of the Linux desktop. And about 2 years, 2 years ago, I think 2008 was sort of, I think, when the Linux desktop was actually there, when all these netbooks came out, right? Most new netbooks had some Linux variant on, and then 2 months later, they all switched back to Windows. So that was sort of the peak of the Linux desktop. But actually, Linux desktop is here now, but it's not what we really perhaps hoped for. It's going to look like this now. And that is, for those of you who don't recognize it, that's Google Chrome OS. based on Linux, you know, and if you go through the checkboxing, it's like all free and open and everything. It doesn't actually contain any software, because all the, or actually, all of these applications that they put there are just websites, basically, right? And that is, of course, the way Google wants to go. And then that's not because, you know, they want to, maybe it's because they are evil, but they claim they're not evil. So that, I guess you can really see that this is Gmail, Hotmail, Yahoo Mail, Google Calendar, Google Reader, Google Docs, YouTube, Picasa Web, it's a sharp application, there are a bunch of social webs that I don't really recognize so much. To-do list, some calculator, one of the calculators actually local. Some books, chess, Facebook, Twitter. So that's, you know, that's the applications of the future, I suppose. And so this is obviously Google's way of the way they think things are going to be. But if you look around, maybe you give a Linux desktop to, you know, some family member, and I've done that, and they started using it without any problems. And that's not because, you know, LXDE is so the most user-friendly thing in the world. That's just basically because what they use is Firefox and OpenOffice, basically, right? And then, so even if you're not sort of Google, this is what people out there are actually using, you know, not the hackers that have, you know, BI and the terminals and compilers. So. But this is what people are actually using, so this is where things are going to go. But where does it actually leave Linux distributors? Because what you actually ship to the user now is basically just the frame around this, right? And then you don't have any control over what these things really are. And so if where does that leave us and the sort of goals we have, right? We don't have anything to distribute anymore except the box around it. We have nothing to integrate. We have no control over any of the freedoms that we were supposed to enforce or implement or provide. So here, those problems basically. You have server-side software that is not free, usually. There are sites, you know, where the software is technically free, but there are some other problems because you don't, you know, they tell you, well, this is the software, it's free, you can download it and do it yourself. But, you know, maybe the hosting is not free, I don't know if, what could that mean, but, because they can tell you this is the source, but you don't know if that's actually the source they're running, or if they have any extensions in there, or you don't know what's happening to your data. And you know, even if they say, well, you protect your privacy, this and that, as you all know, there's all these leaks, and this and that, and they change the policies and so on. And there's no open source community in the sense, you know, there's no peer review of things that are going on. You don't really have good feedback mechanisms. They just share bug reporting, fixing sort of thing. It's not strictly necessary, you know, to have a free software project, but it's still sort of recognized as a component that you sort of have this software engineering methodology, I suppose, around this open source idea. You don't really have any of that if you know all you use is Facebook and Gmail. So how could this be addressed? So first of all, you need more of the of free web services. Because you know there's Gmail, which is not free. A lot of people use that. There's no equivalent of that. It's free software. Of course, there are some web application, web mail applications, but they're not really nice, right? And a lot of software needs to be written. And yesterday, actually, there was a talk, might have been actually here or in some neighboring room by the Mozilla folks. They said that, you know, the web is inherently hackable, because you have the source code and everything, you know, you have the source code basically. That's true to some degree, but it's, I don't think it's actually really true. Because of course you have the source code, but have you actually looked at the source code of complex web application. You might as well argue, well, you know, you can hack anything because you can reverse assemble it. That doesn't help. And even if you can hack it, maybe it's not legal. So you need, there's just a bunch of new software that needs to be written to fit into, you know, what people want to use. Right now. There are some things that are already going in that direction. Identica is the Twitter replacement or alternative, for example. OpenStreetMap is well known, of course. There's a Google Maps alternative, perhaps. And so new things from KDE's own cloud, which more of an initiative right now than actually a product, but they are thinking of ways to make their software accessible. And there needs to be just a bunch of more things in that area. We don't have any sort of web office type things, for example. And obviously, that would be a huge job, so it's not going to happen in the next 3 months, supposedly. So think more of what you can do to not replace, but to have alternatives to, say, Google instead of alternatives to Microsoft. Because that was sort of the big sort of goal throughout the 90s, perhaps, everything that Microsoft or these sort of companies had needs to have a free replacement. And operating system, that's done. There's the Office, that's done more or less, and a few other things. So that's what people sort of aim for. That's kind of finished right now. Obviously, there's quality issues and various things like that, but it's kind of done now. But in the meantime, actually, this whole new field is open of web applications that are driven by mostly Google and other things, other companies, and there's no real credible alternatives to much of that software. So but those are good starts. So the second, we need some kind of a free hosting model, and that's very hard to figure out how to actually do that. So let's think, if I am a user of free software, and I want to make use of my freedoms, and I can download the source from the original author. I can download the packaging, I can rebuild it myself, I can do changes and then use those change versions. That's all the things we do, right? But how do you do that with a web service? Even if you have a free one, Of course, the software needs to be free first of all, so you can actually look at it. And then, how do you? Let's say you have OpenStreetMap and you want to make some change. You don't like the way it renders and change the color. So how do you do that? You can't go to OpenStreetMap and go there and check the source code that's actually running and then make changes there and then have it hosted there. It doesn't work, right? So it's, you can get the source code perhaps and you can get the data dump from them. Then you need to basically do the whole hosting yourself. And it's obviously feasible. It's not sort of the same idea that you can just have the same software, you build it and have it running. Unchanged, you need to set up your own, myopenstreetmap.org and do your things there. And obviously that doesn't scale if 100,000 users want to make their own changes and merge them back together or something like that. You'll have 1,000 OpenStreetMap clones. So I don't know how that's actually going to work, but it's something. There are possible ways to do that with virtualization. You could have OpenStreetMap, for example, could have like a virtualization hosting of alternative branches, let's call them, and then you just sort of click around, make the changes, upload them, then they have this in the subdomain. I'm not sure that helps, but I don't know, that needs thinking. There's a sort of example that is not really addressing this completely, but sort of an idea of a community hostings, host sharing. .net is a German ISP, I guess. They provide DNS and web states and this sort of thing. But it's a non-profit association, and you can sort of become a member there, and then you sort of join the sysadmin team and do sort of join in there and run the thing as a community to some degree. So that could be useful to sort of draw experiences from, but as I said, this is very unclear how that can actually work. So the next thing is some sort of the whole issue of data. which is never a problem if you have a local installation. This is with the traditional way of using software, you have the software on your own machine and you worry about, you know, is the software free and then can I change it. But the data is always there. And sometimes it's in the format that you don't like. You always have the source that reads the format so you can access that. But if the software is actually deployed somewhere else, then the data is there and can't necessarily get to that. So that needs some sort of a policy or some ways to check what's happening to your data and B, actually get your data out of there to use it in a different context, for example. And so that needs some kind of, depends on how this hosting works out. You know, you can't give every user SSH access to that box and let them check the logs of what's happening to their data. But ultimately, as a user, that's what I would like, but it's very impractical to provide that. Data dumps are actually already happening. You can get data dumps from all these sort of things, for example. Download, you know, the data is against it. And there is this notion in the GPL, for example, when you need, you know, the GPL requires you in some circumstances to provide the source code to the recipient of the software. And it has this notion of preferred form for modification, right? You can't just give them some random misformatted pre-built binary semi-compiled version. You need to actually give them the source that you were using to, or a reasonable person, I suppose, would use for modifying the source. The same could apply here, potentially, that you know you need to provide access to the data in some preferred form. So you can't just give people binary dumps of your internal data format, but you need to maybe some recognized format. So that is pretty easy to define, and I think our people are already using doing that. So that's pretty simple part of this whole exercise here. And the last thing to think about is this licensing in a licensing that sort of enforces these issues here. And there is some, there's already a license that some of you will know. Attempts to do that. It's somewhat controversial, but I think it sort of does the job for a lot of cases. That's the AGPL, the Affero General Public License. And that basically says it's a GPL plus if you provide this software as a web service, I'm sort of summarizing, but it basically says, you know, it's GPL plus if you provide this software as a web service and you change it, you need to make the changes available for download over a network, so, or you know, a written offer to ship it or things like that. So, and that essentially gets the job done if you think about something like, you know, maybe Identica. If you had written Identica, right? I can't read that actually back there. 15 minutes, okay. If you had actually written Identica and then someone took it and actually hosted it and made some changes, they would be required to put the tarball on their website to download. That, I think that makes quite a bit of sense, but there are some practical problems that have been mentioned. For example, what if you use some AGPL licensed software to implement or change a mail server, SMTP server? How would you make an SMTP server offer code for download? You know, no one knows the answer to that because the license doesn't say that. You have to either, you know, you could put a link in the, was it the SMTP welcome message, but that doesn't really make any sense, right? It doesn't actually in practice help users, so. But, you know, so the Free Software Foundation has actually approved this, so, and some significant projects or products are using that, so that I think that's the way sort of things are going to go. Potentially, you know how this was like 10, 15 years ago when sort of this free open source software took off, everyone wrote their own license because they thought, you know, this is the best way to actually enforce what I want. And over time, this has consolidated. And maybe we're already consolidated now, or maybe there's going to be more things coming up, or maybe no one cares if none of this is going to happen. It's of course also possible. But, so look for some sort of licensing issues there. So now I think actually some of these things are not going to sort of, you know, be implemented in, say, Debian or Fedora anytime soon. It needs, it's difficult to arrange, you know, make decisions on policies and licenses and hosting and so on. So I think this would, you know, be opportunities for commercial vendors of Linux distributions and so on. Same way early Linux distributions, at least many of them were commercial vendors, right? That's what, you know, the way Red Hat and SUSE got started. They assembled software and packaged it a little bit, and then they charged for that to give that to you, right? You paid, you know, how much it was, like some 50 euros. Other currency actually back then. So to get that box, and over time this was sort of commoditized because you had, you know, broadband download, and now you just download things and you can't really charge for that anymore, and now it's all open, it's open this Fedora and so on. The same thing could happen here, that some vendors in Ubuntu, Canonical is essentially doing that already to sort of define some of these things and make things happen and charge people for it. And over time, as we go on, there could be, you know, completely free community-driven alternatives to that appearing as soon as, you know, these sort of things are resolved or someone has an idea about that. So this is an abbreviated version of the free software definition. And this is from, you know, the 80s actually. This is what we've been using so far. This is the foundation of, you know, the open source definition and the free software guidelines and so on. All this sort of comes from that. So this will still work, I think. If you want to, let's think about a web service. You want to have the freedom to run it, you want to have the freedom to change it. There's some problem here. You don't want to have the freedom to change it initially and redeploy that changed version in the same environment. As I mentioned, this is very difficult to do right now. You can redistribute it, host it yourself. You can distribute whatever you change and so on. So this is still valid, but I think there's, you know, some additions to that should be thought about, and people are thinking about that. So this is sort of an idea here. The issue of data is very important. And I think that it was actually at FOSDEM many years ago that Tim O'Reilly was actually having a keynote, and he was sort of going on about control of data is going to be important. And back then, this was kind of, yeah, but actually now it's more current than ever. So, I don't want to say, you know, this is the fourth item here, because I don't want to be presumptuous and sort of redefine the software definition right now, but I think this somehow needs to be integrated into the various licensing policies and the various things like that. And I don't think anyone has really addressed it in a universally recognized way right now. So here are some links. It's a nice blog entry by... Is he here, Joachim Weidner? No.
I haven't seen him.
No, that, okay. It's a very nice blog entry where he actually went through various sort of freedoms and rights he would like to have, and then compared various services like, you know, Facebook, Identica, and email and things like that against that. And actually, this well-known person had a talk, Freedom in the Cloud, on Friday, actually. And I've not seen it, but obviously it's kind of the same idea. I checked this morning, the video wasn't up yet, but there was a link video coming. So it'd be very interesting to look into it. If you just Google for this exact, I guess, I don't know if you're allowed to Google it anymore now after hearing this, but if you want to search with the free search provider of your choice for this, you will find it. It'd be very interesting. As I said, I've not seen it. So to conclude, this, you know, you can just ignore that because other people will do it, but ultimately this will make Linux distributors marginalized, perhaps, or other people will do it in ways you wouldn't like, because they will not, you know, use the same sort of standards of freedom and integration and so on. So think about what you know, in your project and so on that people work on. So how can you take all this cloud software and then maybe write new cloud software and integrate it to make it into a nice package that you can then ship to your users in the way they would, you know, expect it now or certainly in a couple of years from now. And think about ways to new ways to distribute software instead of shipping ISO images. And, you know, you download the ISO image, burn it on a CD, install, then you throw the CD away. That's ridiculous, right? So think about new ways to distribute software, and think about freedom in the cloud. Maybe look at a talk by Ivan Moglen, or think about new ways to augment the definitions of freedom that you use for yourself. So. And as Linux distributions, I think we should be at the center of this drive. So that's all I have. Questions? There's one question.
The Eucalyptus project.
Yes.
I suppose that's the purpose is to install virtual machines from scratch. Is there much similarity between it and the spacewalk?
Between that and what?
And the spacewalk?
I don't know that so much. So the question was, is Eucalyptus similar to spacewalk? I don't actually know spacewalk. So what is that do?
But you were doing
Yeah, so this is the problem process. So. Yeah, I don't know. This is something to figure out and blog about afterwards. What Eucalyptus actually does is this, what I, you know, it's kind of a screenshot of what I'm doing to this. It's basically a web interface to say, you know, I want this sort of machine and I want to install it to A, Amazon, or B, my private cloud, or in the future, other things.
Yeah. I think
this
blog is sort of a finer granularity that they'll roll out maybe different packages and so on, but you can see that there could be sort of crossover between the two.
Certainly there's going to be, you know, 15 package managers initially and maybe two left. It's all starting. Yes?
I was with Cisco guys 3 days ago and they said to me that there is an NIST group working on a definition, an exact definition of what is a cloud. Is there a work between the community and the NIST in order to set the definition as a cloud?
Which NIST were you referring to?
I don't have the right person. I think I could give it to you, but apparently there is a working group in order to define exactly as a standard what is cloud.
You mean like APIs for deploying cloud services and things like that? Yes, so the question was, there's a working group apparently to define what cloud is. So there are standardization efforts going on. You know, people say that the IETF and so on. And think about ways to standardize various interfaces to these services. So this is work going on and to be followed. Yes, it's all happening right now, so that's why I'm talking about this here, so you can look for it. Other questions? Okay, then thank you.